Hi, Ken here. In nearly all of our podcasts, you hear students asking questions and their interaction with me. Many listeners find these exchanges illuminating because what is being asked is often exactly what is on their minds. If you find these conversations helpful, please make a donation at unfetteredmind.org/donate so we can maintain and expand our website. Thanks.
Unfettered Mind. Mind Training, Santa Fe Retreat, Part 14.
Guidelines. Has anybody else had the sense that time sort of stopped for the last 10 days? Just like, just here. Reminds me of the 3-year retreat, where you just did the same thing every day, and one day you'd look out your window and it's spring, and another day you'd look out your window and it's summer, and a little while later you'd look out, what are those leaves doing on? Oh, I guess it's fall. You know, it's just certain timelessness. Use one practice to do everything. Now, oh, sorry. Yeah, it is on. Not picking anything up? Maybe if I turn the microphone the right way up, it would help. There we go. How's that? Kathleen? Try this. Okay. This is about a practice. Now, at an advanced stage, you can say practice is about doing nothing, or doing nothing is a practice. But I'm not going to let you get away with that one at this point. So, even though we're talking about being present, that's actually the result of an effort. So, a practice is something you do. And in many cases, I've observed that when people say, you know, my practice is presence, or that's what I do, or even if I ask people for an intention, they say, my intention is to be present. That can be a way of avoiding internal material. Or actually, sometimes external material, stuff that's around. So, in the technique that I introduced yesterday, focus field and internal material, and out of that, one moves into presence. Both the field, which is the whole sensory field, and the internal material, all the thoughts and feelings, one really has to include both of those. Often I've heard the words, you know, this is a very spacious feeling. And
when I go a little further with those people, yes, it is a spacious feeling. They're spaced out. And so I'm often suspicious when people describe their practice as very spacious, because in many cases there's been either a dulling out or an actual ignoring going on. I mean, it's when you're really present that there is things feel open, but they're also very vivid, and there isn't any really floaty kind of feeling. So I always get a little suspicious around that one. So, in the classical approach to this, you know, whatever you're doing it with the intention of training the mind or helping sentient beings. What does this mean in terms of something like sweeping the floor? Well, by sweeping the floor in attention, if you put this in the context of bodhisattva vow, you are fulfilling the bodhisattva vow. Remember that the bodhisattva vow says, just as the sukkhitas of former times aroused awakening mind and progressively followed the training of an awakening being, I too, for the benefit of beings, arouse awakening mind and progressively follow that training. What is the training? Training in attention. A sugata, it's an epithet for Buddha. Literally it means thus gone. Yeah, it's thus gone or thus come. It's a strange epithet and is explained in many ways. The full one is one gone or come, depending on your point of view, to thatness or suchness. It's you have that one, and then you have Tathagata, which means one has gone to the nature, and then you have Tathagata, Tathagata, and there's another one which means one gone to bliss. I can't remember the Sanskrit. But they're all epithets for Buddha, for being fully awake. I will leave that to you to determine. Franca? Yes. Come, beyond, come completely beyond. Doesn't quite work. I've seen it interpreted as come, definitely. And the Tibetan, I'm not sure about the Sanskrit, but the Tibetan can mean either come or gone. This is the verb shekpa, which just, it's the honorific to travel. Yeah. Oh, yes, either to train the mind or to help sentient beings. Reason. So when you're sweeping the floor, you sweep the floor in attention, and that is following the training of the Buddhas, Bodhisattvas that have come before. And it is by how you do the activity that fulfills the working for the benefit of sentient beings. because through that you are training your mind to be in attention so that you can be present in every situation. There's a woman who is a well-known Zen teacher, I think in 19th century Japan, and her son died. And of course she was quite upset. And at the funeral, when her son was being buried, she was crying. And the students were very confused by this. And said to her, you've always said, don't form attachments, and everything is impermanent, and everything is illusion. Why are you crying? And she looked at them very fiercely and said, every one of my tears saves countless sentient beings. Yes. That's right. That's a very important point, because many people feel that when you do this practice enough, you're not meant to feel anything. That's quite right. Okay. I'll let you sit with that one for a while. What we are doing in our lives, and by making our practice our lives, is one formulation I use, is tending to the world of complete experience. And I've already suggested some ways we do that by opening to that world, and wherever we sense imbalance, bringing attention to that and dissolving the sense of subject-object that arises with imbalance, and things move back into balance. It's that we do the same thing during our life, when we're walking around interacting with other people. And wherever imbalances arise, we work right there. We tend to that. That actually is the expression of compassion. Now, the next line, use one remedy for everything. In Buddhism, we have many, many tools. And in the Tibetan tradition, we have too many tools. Learn to use a few tools very, very deeply. Now, there are a number of tools which have overall applicability. Four that I offer for your consideration. Doing what's next. Impermanence. Oh, sorry. Doing what's next. Faith or loving kindness. impermanence and compassion. Now, any one of those tools is actually all you need. Yes? Doing what's next. Your awareness, just whatever's next, you do that. No. No, it isn't. I think you probably could call it mindfulness in action or something like that, but I'd prefer to use this formulation. But no, there's no Tibetan that I'm drawing from. I'll dig around and see if I can find something. Yes. Okay. Which is why there isn't a nice one for doing what's next, because power is not an explicit tool in most practices, most traditions. Sorry. And I said, yes. In the Tibetan tradition, power, which is what that one corresponds to, is not used in practice very much. Effective action? Yeah, that's right. It's in there, but there isn't an explicit practice of it that I've come across. It's implicit in a lot of things. And what I'm trying to do here is make these explicit. Now, in each of these four tools, you can choose any one of them. And what we've been working with in the course of this retreat is primarily the fourth one, compassion. But every one of those tools has to, you have to be so deeply trained in it that you can actually make four different kinds of efforts, which are again the four ways of working. That is, you have to know how to restore balance, which is about power, make connection, which is about ecstasy, come to understanding, which is about insight, and serve, which is about compassion. So, loving kindness, for instance, isn't all just mushy and everything's soft and nice. Because when you really train deeply in loving kindness, you know what's yours, you know what's the other person, and you can be very open to that, but you don't take care of stuff for them. There's a maintenance of appropriate boundaries and balance. And there's an understanding that comes from really being open. And the same thing with compassion. Compassion can require one to be very, very clear in situations. And clear, which can feel like cutting right through all of the confusion. I didn't use a no. Service. To serve. Balance. Balance, connection, understanding, service. Okay. Two things to do, one at the beginning, one at the end. As you may recall, this is setting an intention at the beginning of the day and reviewing the day, how you did at the end of the day. This is just a very effective way of keeping your intention in mind. And in that way, it's a support for practice. Whatever happens, good or bad, be patient. Another way of looking at this is, whatever happens, it's not necessarily about you. No? Everything starts going great in your life? Well, that happens. May not be because you did certain things. Everything starts going bad in your life? May or may not be about what you've done. And the point here is just to open to the experience. Work with taking and sending. And everything that arises, approach it as just experience. And if it's a pleasant experience, use it to develop loving kindness and sense of giving. And if it's an unpleasant experience, use it to develop compassion instead of in the sense of taking. Now, you may recall last night that I was explaining how at a certain stage in when you're practicing Chö, you, and this is not limited to Chö by any means, but you develop very intense states of faith, compassion, loving kindness, and mix them with emptiness. And you do that very deliberately, because to undo the idea that these things themselves are real or solid or whatever. All experience is simply an arising in mind, not just the negative stuff. Keep these two even if your life is at risk. The two being your vows and mind training in the classical commentary. Again, you can see this as another injunction to constantly strengthen and reinforce one's intention and the framework of one's practice. On a more internal level, yesterday I talked about dying as part of practice. You can use your intention to help you die to the worlds held by your created and maintained by your projections. And if you consider one's life here, the life of presence, then you die to all other worlds. This is the one life you hold on to. Of course, it's no life to speak of, but I just love Buddhist logic that way. You know, you're holding on desperately to nothing at all. The amazing thing is it works. Train in the three problems. We discussed this in detail earlier. Recognition of a reactive pattern. Practice, developing a practice to work on it. and cutting through. I gave the one method of recognizing reactive patterns as observing what you don't notice, observing what you don't question, observing what you don't laugh about. That's important, and I found those immensely helpful. There are other methods. Another one, which I think I may have mentioned, but I will, is to observe where there is a consistent discrepancy between your intention and the results. This is very reliable. You want another one? Okay. This is a tough one. Anything you do which you suspect may have some reactive component in it, make a practice of doing that very precisely one day and behaving exactly opposite the next day. And you alternate the two. If there's a reactive process in there, it will start to scream after a very short period of time. Sure, if you think there's any reactive component in about the way you present yourself to the world, one day you dress absolutely impeccably. You know, everything is just so precise. The way you're groomed, what you're wearing, how colors match, appropriateness in the situation, etc. It's just perfect. Next day, it's a complete mess. Good enough? Yes, that's right. I said this is a tough one. Another example, and I've done this, had a couple of students doing this at various points. I suspected that there was an element of pride in one student that he was not acknowledging. So his assignment was, one day he was to act as if he was the lowest scum of the earth. And he was in a business situation, vice president of a dot-com company when he was doing this. And he was just to act like he was the lowest scum of the earth. And if anybody asked him to do something, even if it was a subordinate, he would just do it. And so no pride whatsoever. Then the next day, he was to act as if he was Lord of the Universe. And things got really interesting quickly. And he was quite comfortable acting as if he was the scum of the earth, because that was his internal image. Built up a certain amount of resentment. But it took him a little while to be able to act like he was Lord of the Universe. But he got to it. And then, much to his dismay and he realized this was what he actually wanted. So it was a whole level of unacknowledged pride, which was the basis for the other side of the pattern. So things became a lot more open after that. So this is a tough practice, but it's really effective. Yes? Don't question. And the order is important. What you don't notice, what you don't question, what you don't laugh about. Okay. Work with the three primary factors. Three primary factors, again, are your teacher, practice, and your condition, the conditions for your practice. And in the classical interpretation, it's saying, you know, if you have those, great, give them away. And if you don't have those, great, take them on. Take on that deficiency from all sentient beings. The underlying point here is, whatever you are experiencing, be right in that. Don't wish it were something else, and don't take what you do have for granted. It's what you happen to be experiencing right now. Little application of this, maybe little divergence, but you form a relationship. It can be an intimate relationship, a social relationship, a business relationship, whatever. What's the one thing you know about that relationship? Pardon? Yes, it's going to end. Okay? Maybe it'll end with the death of one of you, last a long time. Maybe it'll end tomorrow. So what is the appropriate thing to do, effort to make, with something that you know is going to end? Yeah, experience it fully. Or, as a friend of mine puts it, savor it. That's it. That's it. What it is right now. And this gets very interesting when your troubles come up in a relationship. You move right into the experience of that, of those difficulties. That's what the relationship is, right then. So, it's an idea that's implicit in this work with the three primary factors. And whatever your experience is, that's it. If it's what you wanted it to be, fine. Give it away. Taking and sending terms. If it's not what you want it to be, experience that. And take in all that feeling of deficiency and resentment and unhappiness from all sentient beings. These are tools by which you relate to exactly what is arising for you. Don't allow three things to weaken. Again, the three things were confidence or faith in your teacher, enthusiasm for practice, and your ethical code. Your behavior. Each of these is important. If you consider what the three responsibilities of a teacher are, there's an interesting correspondence here. The first responsibility of a teacher is to show you presence, or what it means to be awake. And I think I discussed this earlier, did I? It can be done in two ways, usually a combination of both. One is the teacher is modeling that, not in the sense of acting it out, but doing it. So you observe by being around him or her, you think, oh. And that, incidentally, is the traditional way in which Buddhism has spread. Is you just watch a person go, there's something different about him or her. What is it? And the other way is the teacher elicits an experience through your interactions, elicits an experience of being awake in you. So you are shown what it is very directly. The second, and so having faith and confidence in one's guru corresponds to that responsibility of the teacher. The second responsibility for the teacher, of the teacher, is they give you the tools with which to train and develop the capabilities so that you can become present, can wake up. So the willingness, the enthusiasm to use the tools, or the willingness to make use of what the teacher gives you, corresponds to that second one. To the second responsibility of the teacher. And then the third responsibility of the teacher is to point you, is to point out to you the internal material in you that gets in the way of your being present. This is what makes interacting with your teacher somewhat like interacting with a dentist. This won't hurt a bit. No. No, what am I? I had a group in Orange County many years ago, and there was one of the people in the group was a dentist. And we were discussing the topic of lying. And one of the other people in the group said, "Dentists always lie." And this other person took umbrage, "And what do you mean?" And he just said, "This is only going to hurt a little." And everybody broke up. So, when the teacher points out your internal material, what he or she, another way of looking at what he or she is doing at that moment, or in that, in exercising that responsibility, fulfilling it, is they're pointing out when your internal process or how you're acting in your life is coming out of reactive material, right? Coming out of a reactive pattern. That's what they're pointing out. In effect, they're pointing out where you are deviating or not fulfilling the ethics of presence. So these don't allow three things to weaken is one way of looking at it is how do you relate in this interaction with your teacher in a way that is complete and whole. You open to what, or you try to pick up what they're pointing out to you in terms of presence. You have enthusiasm for the tools, and you practice them with enthusiasm, the tools that you're being given. And you receive the what they're pointing out to you in terms of reactive patterns as a way of refining your own ethical ethics of in how you live your life. In one case was a CEO of a hospital who negotiated the sale of a non-profit hospital to a for-profit company. And he had run into a fair amount of resistance from various stakeholders in the hospital community, but had successfully guided it through. And after about 6 or 8 months under the new management, he didn't feel very good at all about what he had brought about, because he saw that the whole character of the hospital now was changed, and it could not serve the community in the way that it had. And it was very painful for him to see how his reactive pattern had blinded him to what the real consequences of this transaction were going to be. And this kind of thing happens all over the place. Keep the three essentials. The three essentials are engagement of your body, speech, and mind in the practice. Now, I don't know how this developed historically. I have some ideas, but I really don't know. But at least in the Tibetan tradition, maybe this has something to do with Tibetan culture, body awareness is really not very strong. And an awful lot of practice goes on in the head. And it's really in the head. It's not even in the heart. Much less in the body. And I know that there are similar, even though Zen comes from a body-based culture, there are similar problems there. Theravadin, it's less so because there's the emphasis on mindfulness in the body. It's one of the first foundation of mindfulness, so there seems to be more connection there. But body, speech, and mind all must be engaged in the practice. And one of the most reliable ways for you to become present and to work deeply in your practice, whether in formal meditation or in your daily life, is to pay attention to what your body is experiencing. And I think you've heard me say this a couple of times during the retreat, and I certainly brought it up in the interviews. Every emotion that arises has, that there is an emotional sensation and a physical sensation. And for many people, becoming aware of how that emotion manifests in the body, so they become aware of the physical sensation connected to that emotion, is the most effective way of learning how to be present in the emotion. Yes? Where are you, Jeff? There he is. He's fully trained in Feldenkrais, if you want to speak to him about it. And what you say is more about how yoga is practiced here than the yoga itself, because and this is something that's happening. When I was reading an article in the Shambhala Sun. Yeah, the article on yoga and Buddhism. And one person was describing when she was in Australia, she saw the cover of the equivalent of Vogue in Australia.
Unfettered Mind retains all rights to these podcasts. If you wish to use part or a whole podcast, please send an email to podcasts@unfetteredmind.org.